What's going on, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of Conspiranormal with your host,
Adam Sane.
Your co-host, yours truly, Luke Duke.
What's up, Luke? You doing all right?
Doing all right, I guess.
How's everything going since we last met?
I just helped my dad build some sheds today. Just been I work all night shifts 7 days a week, so
yeah,
I sleep for most of the day, so my days don't last very long anymore.
Yeah, you look a little tanned in here, man. Getting ready for the ladies.
My tan was a lot nicer a few weeks ago.
Well, anyway, what'd you think of Rosemary Ellen Guiley last week or 2 weeks ago?
You know, whenever I'm in the bookstore and I see like a big encyclopedia of anything, not even dealing with the paranormal,
uh-huh,
I'm thinking like, wow, somebody had to go through and chronicle all of this stuff and put this in a book, and yeah, like, what a pain, you know. And that's I didn't read the book myself, but I'm guessing that like it's a big collection of information on like all types of, not just gin, but you know.
Sure. Did you see one of her encyclopedias? Types of
no,
she's got
no,
a few of those out there.
I don't.
They're like
I
angels.
I would have caught it at Maximilian because I like to go to BAM and you know, yeah, look through there.
Well, they never have anything that I ever want. Anytime yeah, I go in there,
that's
they never
what I've
have
heard,
a thing.
That's
and
what I've
I could
heard,
go in there and look for the Bible, and it's, they'll say, "Oh, sorry, we don't have
yeah,
that."
Yeah, okay.
Would you like us to order it?
No, they've got an entire wall of that. Trust me.
Maybe that's a slight exaggeration. Well, it is a momentous occasion, Luke, because this is show number 33.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've talked about the number 33 quite a lot in this show,
yeah,
I thought it appropriate tonight to bring on Adam Gorightly for a third time. So he's coming on for the third time on show 33. Can't get any numerologically better than that.
Does the salad have grapes on it?
Yeah, that's what you overheard last time when we were taking a little bit of a break. But, yeah, it's weird because we had that show, I believe, with him. We had, I think, Scotty Roberts on, I think, the next night, or maybe it was him the next time. I forget the order. But one of them, they both talked about the 33rd parallel and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we had Gorightly on. That was the second time we had him on.
Yeah.
And then the next day, we're at our workplace when you worked over there, and we're pulling around the Burger King, and there's a fire truck, and it's parked at the Burger King, and it's fire truck number 33.
Yeah, well, that I don't know about a coincidence. That's just,
well, you know, it keeps popping up for me, man. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's
maybe
just because you're
superstitious
now
or something. Yeah, yeah. But I thought we'd bring him on, talk about some of the interesting things. We're going to be talking about James Shelby Downard, who was an author who passed away in the 90s, and he wrote a lot about the Freemasons and about
sounds like a downer.
Masonic, yeah, Masonic conspiracies and the King, specifically the King Kill 33 degree conspiracy. So we're gonna bring Adam Gorightly on,
right on,
and we'll just come back at the end to close out the show, and we'll be right back on Conspiranormal with Adam Gorightly. All right, we are back on Conspiranormal. This is your host, Adam, and Luke.
I refuse. I hate it when you use that plug.
All right, well, on the line, we have Mr. Adam Gorightly making his third appearance on Conspiranormal. Adam, we want to thank you for coming back on.
Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me once again.
And it's our 33rd show today. So.
Oh, perfect. Perfect,
We're going to talk about, I thought would be like pertinent, would be the King Kill 33 degree conspiracy. We kind of touched mm-hmm. on like the 33rd parallel, I think like the second time that you were on. And we actually had another guest that mentioned that a couple of times. So it was kind of a weird synchronicity. And I was telling Luke here in the intro that the day after we had like your second interview, we're like right next to a fire truck that said number 33 on it. Luke just thinks I'm going crazy. But
yeah, I think he's just looking for 33s everywhere.
But I just want
yeah.
I just wanted to get you on about James Shelby Downard's Mystical War, which is a book I believe is published by you in 2008. And it's a good, like, mm-hmm. short little book. A lot, of, but as short as it is, there's a ton of weirdness. So I just kind of want to dig into it. And if we could kind of start with, you know, who James Shelby Downard was, and like what some of his ideas that he had.
Oh boy, that's what originally got me looking into the book, writing this book. To find out more about the guy, because there's a lot of things out there about him, but, you know, it was hard to tell if he was really ever actually existed, or he was a made-up character that he was like a, perhaps just a literary composite that other authors had used to create this whole mythology about some of his ideas. And, you know, among the ideas are the King Kill 33 theory, which was a work, King Kill 33, written by James Shelby Downard and Michael Anthony Hoffman back in the, originally in the late 70s, and it got really more circulation in the late 80s. Through the book Apocalypse Culture, as I recall. And it posits the theory that the JFK assassination was a Freemasonic ritual of sorts, all enacted upon the 33rd degree latitude, and using what Downard called mystical toponymy, which is word wizardry, and basically using different words and place names and power sites to basically kill the king, Kennedy. And it was all part of this Freemasonic ritual that brought about what Downard referred to as the revelation of the method. And, yeah, Downard had a lot of interesting ideas. So that was kind of the focus of the book, to delve a little deeper into some of this stuff and to find out if indeed Downard had ever actually existed.
So did he exist? Was he a real person?
Yes is my answer to you. You guys are near Memphis, Tennessee?
Yeah, we're in Nashville. Memphis is about, it's
two
about
hours.
A... Yeah, it's about 2.5 hour drive from us.
Yeah. If you look on the internet, you'll see a lot of people claiming that the likes of Michael Anthony Hoffman and Adam Parfrey at Farrell House, and also a writer by the name of William Grimstad, basically made up the Downard legend, because they all claim contact with him. Yep. Over the years, Michael Anthony Hoffman, I mentioned before, wrote the King Kill 33 with Hoffman. So I started looking into that, and at first it made a lot of sense, because some of the stories are just so outlandish. Like there's a book, The Carnivals of Life and Death, that Farrell House published, and it was like Downard's autobiography from his early years, starting as a child. How he was kind of thrust into this world of Freemasonry, where he became a victim to Freemasonry, basically, and was used as his parents as a pawn, much in the same way you'll hear about these folks now that claim they were products of these bloodlines, these Illuminati bloodlines, where they're groomed from birth to be basically MK-Ultra type victim. So that's what Downard was claiming way back when in this book, The Carnivals of Life and Death. And it's if when you read it, you're just, some of the scenarios are crazy. He's like 5 or 6 years old, and he's battling with these guys and cops and robbers shooting guns, and somehow he always comes out victorious. And you thought, it's just so damn outlandish, why would somebody make this up? It's a little bit too hard to believe. Did this downer really believe this stuff happened to him? Did it really happen to him? So I started, you know, looking into, did Downer actually exist? And I found people, you know, Adam Parfrey claimed he had visited him and spent some quality time, and I don't necessarily doubt Parfrey, and so did Hoffman and these other folks, but I traced it out a little bit more and talked to other people who had actual correspondence with Downer and got a hold of a lot of that, and I saw the mailing address of Memphis, Tennessee, and he was there for a period of time in his later years. For a lot of his life, when he's like in his 40s and 50s, he was traveling around the country looking, and with an Airstream trailer and a Colt 45 revolver by his side. spent a lot of time in St. Petersburg, Florida, and then other parts of the country, and was looking for underground Masonic caverns and paranormal sites. And so there was this huge legend around him, and part of it, he was like keeping his free Masonic adversaries at arm's length. But in later years, he ended up living with his, when he was in like his 70s and 80s in Memphis, Tennessee there, living with his sister. And apparently the Downards had some family money, and that's what kind of kept Downard going over the years. According to Michael Hoffman, Downard's money came from a couple places. He had these strange million-dollar certificates that the FBI gave him at some point as some sort of payoff or some type of weird thing, because he was adversaries with the FBI as well. I'm not sure how all that worked, but also that there was this family money, and they kind of felt guilty for screwing him around, so he was kind of taken care of. In those later years, he lived in Memphis, Tennessee. That's where I saw the mailing address. So if it was a hoax, then the likes of Hoffman or Downard or Parfrey was living in Memphis, Tennessee at this address for several years, and I don't buy into that scenario. And there's photos of Downard and, you know, other people that talked to that corresponded to him. So it, you know, it does indeed, from what all I could see, that he did actually exist. Was he a bit paranoid? Was he perhaps paranoid schizophrenic? Was he part genius, part madman? Maybe a little bit of all of that with the guy. So he interacted with these different people. He was kind of seen as a conspiracy guru. He was talking about this type of stuff that also that Freemasonry was involved with the moon landing. Those were rituals as well, and that a lot of stuff people picked up in later years, like what's the guy who's into all the moon stuff, who's on, his name escapes me right now, he's on Coast to Coast all the time.
Hoagland.
Richard Hoagland. Yeah. That stuff Downard was talking about many, many years ago, but the thing was, he wasn't a very good writer. He had these great ideas, but I've seen some of his self-written manuscripts, and they're very, very poorly written. And that's where Michael Hoffman came into the picture in the late 70s when he was interacting with Downer. And Hoffman has stories where he and William Grinstead and other people, they'd meet in St. Petersburg, and they'd hang out. Downer would be camping someplace in a KOA or somewhere, and he'd fry him up hamburgers, and they'd talk conspiracies. And that's where Downer started talking about this King Kill 33 conspiracy. And at one point, he gave Hoffman a bunch of his material, a box of stuff related to this. Hoffman took that material, and he crafted the written work, the King Kill 33.
So, and you did find an obituary, too. I think you reprint that in the book.
Yeah. A lot of this stuff I'd have to go back in the book, but yeah, I kind of looked into that obituary. At first, it seemed, okay, is this a hoax? And then I looked into it some more, and it was in a legit obituary and traced him his early years back to Ardmore, Oklahoma.
So what was the, like in his viewpoint, the King Kill 33 degree conspiracy, and like, what was the importance of the number 33?
Well, first of all, 33 has, you know, it's, has to do with Freemasonry. And so that's all part of the ritual that things, you know, it's having to do with alchemy and the Kabbalah and all these things and numerology that, you know, they would use certain words and numbers in this ritual, which was basically to bring about a, this what he called the revelation of the method, and there's like three steps in this conspiracy, three great alchemical works that were going to need to happen. One was the creation and destruction of primordial matter that would set things in motion. And Downard suggested that was the atomic bomb blast that happened in the Alamogordo in New Mexico back in, it was like 1947. And so that was like the first step. That it was like an alchemical working. They were creating something. According to Downard, they had this big bomb that they tested. It had an open space in it, and basically what he was contending that a homunculus was placed in that, and some type of entity was created through that bomb blast. And that, so that was the first part of it. Yeah, they were creating weird creatures and setting a new eon in motion. Yeah. The second part was the killing of Kennedy. And the third part, which hasn't happened yet, was this making manifest of all that's unseen, the final act. And at this present time, we don't know what it is. If indeed it there's any truth to any all of this, it may well be nuclear in nature. But with the numbers, you know, you see three happening again and again with the Kennedy assassination. There was three bullets. It happened on the 33rd degree, you know, that runs through Dealey Plaza and Roswell and Alamogordo. It happened near the Triple Underpass. There was three tramps that they picked up that some contended were behind the assassination, that folks have related to, who know Freemasonry, have related to the three unworthy craftsmen that killed who was the guy Hiram Biff, the architect.
Hiram Biff, yeah.
Yeah, who was the architect of Solomon's Temple, as recorded in the legend of the third degree of Freemasonry. There's a number three again. So three goes on, you know, find it again and again in all of this. With the bomb blast at Alamogordo, I should mention that happened at the Trinity site. So it seems the number three has great significance, and you'll see it again and again throughout Downard's work.
What was the revelation of the method? What did he mean by that?
As I interpret it, starting with the Kennedy assassination, a lot of these events that have happened afterward, like 9/11, like the spate of things, you could even look at the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, that there's a mass programming processing that's going on with the human race, where they started with the Kennedy assassination. It's become more and more in your face over the years. They're just programming us, processing us, getting ready for our total enslavement at the hands of them. That's one way of interpreting the revelation of the method.
And that kind of goes into mind control too, or as a form of mind control.
Certainly, yeah. You know, it's this conditioning where after a time, you become complacent about the whole thing. Look at the Kennedy assassination. What jarring effect that had on the psyche, but now, you know, it seems to happen every few times a year now. There's some great event, and the populace, it seems, as a whole, are becoming more complacent about these things, or they're being manipulated into having kind of knee-jerk reaction, and it's used perhaps to manipulate the masses as far as gun control and all these other things related to these events.
I think if it came out now that, without a shadow of a doubt, that Kennedy was killed by the CIA or by the government or whoever it was, and it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald, if that just came out, people would just kind of shrug it off now and just be like, oh well, no big deal.
Yeah. That's been revealed to them over time. Yeah, right. They accept it now, and they're accepting. They can buy into, okay, I can kind of buy that the CIA might have been involved with that, yeah. And so we start to accept that type of gangster government.
You kind of mentioned when I was reading the book about, you know, you had the first act, which was the Trinity explosion out in New Mexico, the second, which would have been Kennedy assassination in Dallas. Even though it's not on the 33rd degree parallel, I couldn't help but think of myself, you know, because Downard was writing these things probably in like from the 60s to the 80s, and I couldn't help thinking to myself that maybe 9/11 was that final act.
Well, it could very well have been. Downard, yeah. I'm trying to remember when he died. No, I think it was the late 90s.
So. Yeah, I think it's like 98 is what the obituary said.
Yeah, that's right. And he was still, yeah, you make a good point there. Could very well have been the act that was the making manifest of all that's unseen, the final act, as they say.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit in with the 33rd degree parallel, but...
That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, just because it wasn't on the 33rd degree parallel that it wasn't the act.
Right. There's also a lot of links in the book. You mean you just don't talk about Dannard. You talk about the Son of Sam murders and some of those things as well. You know, what's kind of the link of some of the things that Dannard wrote about? And also to events like the Son of Sam murder in particular, like what was going on with that?
Well, the reason I got into that, I was more of a Michael Anthony Hoffman kind of tied that into some of these events. I guess he was really looking at, this was a similar type of Masonic hoodwink with the Son of Sam killings, and that it was tied into a lot of this mass processing with Hollywood and movies, and he kind of tied it into the movie The Wicker Man, which once again had to do with ritual sacrifice, if anybody has seen that movie, and the theme of May Day and fertility rights. And
this is not the terrible Nicolas Cage remake. How to get burned!
I haven't even seen that. I've seen Hammer Films version from back in the day. So
I've seen that one too.
That's a decent movie, and a lot of people relate to the Burning Man Festival with what's going on there. But there was a lot of hints that in letters that Berkowitz wrote talking about a wicked king wicker and these type of things. So, you know, Hoffman put those pieces together. As far as vast conspiracies, you know, a lot of people have connected the Son of Sam killings. Even David Berkowitz did from prison, claiming years later that he had been part of this vast satanic underground that was connected to the Process Church of the Final Judgment, who writers like Maury Terry claim was involved with the Manson murderers and a whole spat of murders that murders and snuff films that were directed by this group that was kind of a splinter cult called the Children. They were a splinter group from the Process Church of the Final Judgment, which allegedly David Berkowitz was involved with. It gets pretty convoluted, some of this.
Yeah, stuff. It gets pretty deep, and there's connections with Manson, too.
Yeah.
The whole Manson family murders and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, too, you talk about in the book is that there's a connection between, like, the St. Francis Hotel and what happened there in the 20s with Fatty Arbuckle.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, and that somehow connects to Eliphas Levi. How you say it?
Yeah.
Luke's familiar with Eliphas Levi and his writings.
Only slightly. I just skimmed through the Gems of the Equinox. I didn't read the whole thing.
the Cliff's Notes version.
Well,
so there's some connections there between like some magical workings going on there too.
Yeah, according to Downer, there was some type, and he talks about really a group that was working throughout the U.S. It was made up of, as before the CIA was the CIA, members of the OSS back in the early days, and gangsters and whatnot were part of this basically group involved in these sex magic rituals, and that they recruited Downard's wife, whose name was Ann Whitwer, and basically stole her from Downard, and she became part of this ritual circus. But he also talks about the Fatty Arbuckle thing that was one of these magic rituals, and like you said, it happened at the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco, and once again, St. Francis connects to different stuff, and it was Fatty Arbuckle who allegedly raped an actress whose name was Virginia Rappe, yeah. R-A-P-P-E. So once again, they were using this mystical toponymy, they called it, this alchemy of words and places and names. And so as part of this rite, Arbuckle used a wine bottle, allegedly, producing what Downard called the must of the elephant and fulfilling his role as the chubby behemoth, yeah. which relates, once again, Downward to the legend of Beelzebub. Who knows what to make of all this stuff, but, these type of things are utilizing a lot of this. According to Downard and Hoffman, it imprints the dreaming group mind with subliminal imagery.
What were some of the
Hoffman calls twilight language?
Yeah, what is that concept of twilight language? That's something that I've heard from another person we've had on the show, Russ Dizdar. He mentioned,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he mentioned twilight language.
Yeah, well, it imprints the minds with what's really going on behind the scenes. It's kind of, once again, that revelation of the method. You're speaking to the subconscious. So in the case of Virginia Rappe, that could equate to the virgin rape in part of as part of this alchemical rite. You know, and so twilight language, it's basically, once again, this big processing and conditioning by using all this subconscious imagery. Much, you know, I get into the movie a bit, Eyes Wide Shut, and how a lot of the imagery there seems to relate to the movie and the book, The Wizard of Oz, and that according in the lore of in conspiracy lore about MK Ultra and whatnot, and also the Monarch mind control programming, it's these type of images from The Wizard of Oz, and a lot of the language from The Wizard of Oz is twilight language that alludes to other things that go on during the programming of its victims.
So it's almost like a very sophisticated form of allegory.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way of putting it, yeah.
And I want to talk about Eyes Wide Shut, too. I mean, that's... I remember watching that movie when it came out on video back in the late 90s. And that was a movie that I didn't really like it that much. Mm-hmm. I just didn't think it was a very good movie. And I just thought the plot was kind of stupid. But you've got me interested after reading this of watching that movie again, and especially knowing what I know now about mind control and all kinds of things like that. What's some of the things that are in that movie that makes it kind of an allegory of mind control?
Well, let me preface all this by saying I had contacted somebody when I was working on this article, and I was talking about, and it was somebody who knew, because I had mentioned I had picked out a lot of this different monarch mind control programming. So I started networking with different folks who were in that community with victims, and I started hearing indeed people who had seen this that were part of the victim community were impacted pretty heavily. A lot of the imagery and the wording were triggering their programming, so they had to avoid the movie. Now, I had looked into, I've been looking into the mind control literature over the years, and it was probably in the late 80s, mid 90s, you started hearing about some of this monarch mind control programming, how the imagery from the Wizard of Oz was used and whatnot. And, some people contend that a lot of this is red herrings, that it's some of the stories coming from monarch victims are basically there to muddy the waters, and that they've been they've been programmed themselves with false programming. You know, a lot of the crazy stories you hear about, George Bush turning into a shape-shifting reptilian and shooting smack and all of this. Yeah. Stuff. So there's a lot of this information seems to have been intentionally planted to basically undermine a lot of the victims who came forward. But with the stories they came forward with were once again that the Wizard of Oz was basically used as a programming matrix. And I saw a lot of references to the Wizard of Oz in Eyes Wide Shut. They were they referred to Rainbow was referred to a lot of the times in the movie. He visited a place called Rainbow Costumes, which was located another shop called Under the Rainbow, and there were some strange things that happened there. At one point, Dr. Bill is that's Tom Cruise's character. He's seduced by a couple of quote-unquote models, and I began thinking immediately of the presidential models. Those were the early MK-Ultra victims, and so these two models take him arm-in-arm, and I believe they say he asks them where they are taking him, and they say where the rainbow ends. And there's a lot of those, again and again, Wizard of Oz references in this movie. If you watch it, you'll see them time and again. So I thought things like that were curious. And the whole movie itself is basically about, you know, this weird Illuminati group and yeah. rituals that go on, and people who seem to disassociate. If you look at Nicole Kidman, that's her name, right? Kidman, yeah.
Yeah, Kidman.
She was Cruise's wife at that time, and she seems to be a character that disassociates. She has alternate personalities, you know, like a lot of these MK ultra victims do. And it's interesting that Tom Cruise was in this movie. I mean, a lot of people think Scientology is a mind control cult, but right. also be aware that Scientology for years battled with the CIA and the whole psychoanalytical movement that they were pitted against. I don't know if you're aware of all that, so it's there might have been more awareness on Tom Cruise's part about what this movie was trying to say or what this movie was trying to reveal, and some could see this movie as one further step in the revelation of the method of showing how all these mechanisms work behind the scenes with mind control and Twilight language and all this crazy stuff.
Yeah, it really got my gears turning when you, and I went to go actually look for the movie on Netflix, and it's not on the watch now, but so I could watch it again, because mm-hmm. I just want to kind of look at it with a new light. And I know that Kubrick, that was his last movie, and he died not too soon. Well, I mean, pretty much I guess towards the end of filming it. And so I guess there's some speculation that he had just finally revealed too much. And
yeah, that's supposedly the story, according to Alex Jones. And how much you want to place on him? He said the day before Kubrick died, he had an argument with the producers for Eyes Wide Shut over certain content they wanted removed from the film. So who knows what happened? I know there's two different cuts of the movie, I believe, and I don't think I've ever seen. I think there's a director's cut as well as the one that was released at the time. Now, you're saying it's available on Netflix, one of the versions?
It used to be. You used to be able to watch it, the instant streaming, but it's not anymore. Mm-hmm. I think you just get it. You just have to add it, I think, and get it that way. So I kind of want to sit down and watch it again. And it is a. It was just a very. I remember watching it and just thinking, this is a very strange movie. And I remember thinking that there wasn't much of a payoff, because you kind of had this idea about the, I was really into the whole Illuminati conspiracy and everything back then, and I was just thinking to myself, really, there isn't really much of a payoff, because the girl dies, and the implication is that the Illuminati killed her, but that just kind of fizzles out at the end. So I wonder if there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, if you weren't aware of a lot of the stuff I mentioned, I'd probably have the same reaction to the movie. It's like, what's the deal with this? It's very obscure and gratuitous stuff. After I wrote that, originally I'd written that article years before the Downard book came out, and I kind of inserted it in there because I thought it fit, but it was probably, I forget how many years, but at least 10 years ago I wrote that. And since then, if you comb the web, you'll see other articles folks have written pointing to other things in the movie. A lot of people have really analyzed Eyes Wide Shut, even though I think I may have been really one of the first to pick up on a lot of this imagery. So, yeah, you might want to scan the web and put together a list. And also, I haven't seen it since it originally came out, so I probably need to watch it again one of these days, and also look for the different versions, because, I think there was a director's cut or an alternate
version. I'm real curious to see that now that you mentioned that.
Yeah, I'll probably watch that tonight during work. But going back to an earlier topic, did you ever hear allegations of Obama going to underground sex clubs in Chicago?
No, but I'd love to hear about it.
I come across some YouTube videos. They're probably not even there anymore, but there were a couple men claiming to be involved in a wild night of cocaine and drinking and everything with Obama back when he was a senator. And mm-hmm. one of the men is claiming that he and Obama, you know, did things with each other, and this was some kind of, you know, underground, like, VIP club. And one of the men died from some kind of strange death. I don't remember exactly what it was. It was a heart attack or something. You know, heart attack seems to be pretty standard to get rid of people they don't like. But the second man involved was trying to put it out there and into common knowledge that, you know, what was going on, and he was showing newspaper articles of this man and stuff because they had just generally just erased him. You know, they just tried to erase him completely because he was threatening to come forth, you know, with the knowledge of what was going on and trying to reveal it to everybody. So the guy was assassinated and all of it was silenced.
Yeah, I remember now that you mention it, hearing about some of that. Yeah, there's so much with the advent of the internet over the years. So many of these stories trying to separate the BS from the real stories. I've gotten a little bit overwhelmed over the years, but it's interesting to mention that, and it brought up what Downard was talking about, how these different sex rituals, how it was used by these government gangster group. And he said part of the intent behind that was to blackmail politicians, and so they control people in power, you know. So perhaps that's you know, how they control these people, even when they get to the presidency, like Obama. This is part of it, you know.
Is it Bohemian Grove going on right now?
Yeah, I think it's interesting you should bring that up today.
Just reminded me.
I was kind of following that. I'd like to go out there sometime. Actually started yesterday on Facebook. There's a anti-Bohemian Grove group that gets together. Last year they did Occupy Bohemian Grove, and I was planning to go out there just more of a journalistic capacity, and I didn't make it out, and I don't think I'll have time this year, but it's they're out there and they're monitoring the activities of the luminaries as they're coming in, and I got on their Facebook page, and they're kind of mobilizing. They're sending folks out. Apparently there's a small airport where you fly into, and this is it's located north of San Francisco, about 50 miles in near the town of Monte Rio, which has some other interesting connections I can talk about in a minute. But anyway, on the Facebook page, they're encouraging, they needed a group of some people to go out to the airport and take photos, and they're encouraging folks to bring their bullhorns and to be ready there at the entrance of Bohemian Grove as the folks are, you know, the luminaries, the big shots, the Bohemian Grovers are driving into the place. Anyway, I'm familiar with that area, and I'd like to go, if I had the time right now, I'd just go out to kind of check out the scene and write about it.
Yeah. What's the weirdness about that town that played that you said Monte Rio?
Yeah, well, weird in the sense that it has to do with other things I've written about, the Kerry Thornley and the group of Discordians and Robert Anton Wilson. Interestingly enough, before I wasn't quite aware. I knew Bohemian Grove was somewhere in that area, but I chronicled, you know, in my book, The Prankster and the Conspiracy, about Kerry Thornley and his friend Greg Hill, the founders of Discordianism, and Robert Anton Wilson was part of that bunch, and another writer by the name of Camden Benares. These are all published authors. And they were kind of into the hippie scene and Discordianism. Of course, you know Thornley's weird background related to the Kennedy assassination. But anyway, long story short, sort of, in the early 70s, they ended up in and around Monte Rio. Greg Hill the founder of Discordianism, author of the Principia Discordia, he ended up operating the movie theater there at Cinema Rio, and it was an old Quonset hut. And they basically, it was a community project with all the hippies or whatever. He never made that much money, but he got the whole community involved with the theater, and they also did like free concerts there for the hippie kids out on the beach. And it's funny, during a period around 72, Robert Anton Wilson was nearby. He was like 5 miles away in a town called Rio Nido, and Camden Mineris was at the, he ran the post office in Camp Meeker. This is all within a few miles of Monte Rio. So, you know, these were the guys, Wilson and Thornley, who kind of helped revive the Bavarian Illuminati mythos.
Yeah.
And it's strange that, and they, you know, doing pranks about it, and I've written quite extensively about this. They even, Wilson and Thornley planted a letter, really a hoax in Playboy, when Wilson was the editor there, claiming that the Bavarian Illuminati was behind all the major political assassinations, and it seemed to plant some sort of magical, or pushed a magical button. All of a sudden, folks on the left, the liberal left and the conservative right, were talking about the Illuminati. You see how this has evolved over the year. I'm not saying that it's all because of Wilson and Thornley, but they had a big part in reviving this Illuminati mythos, and they were right there in the heart of supposedly where the Illuminati meet every year. When I brought this up to Robert Anton Wilson years later, around 2003, he seemed sort of perplexed. He wasn't aware of the connection, which seems odd that he wouldn't know that that's where they meet, at Bohemian Grove, that he was living right in that area for a while. And of course, some claim that Wilson was ahead of, the head of the Illuminati.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the weird connection to Monte Rio and Discordianism and this whole Illuminati mythos and what goes on at Bohemian Grove every year.
I wanted to ask you, Adam, too, something that's an interesting connection in the book about the star Sirius.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to come up a lot.
The dog days of Sirius are coming up here.
Very soon.
Shortly. Yeah, it kind of, I think at this Bohemian Grove meeting commits, or by the end of it is when they start. It's usually around July 23rd through, goes into August, and, you know, they say a lot of ritual stuff goes on, some bad ritual, good ritual, whatever. Some of the bad things are like the Manson family murders happened during that period, August 8th and 9th, and a lot of, if you get out a calendar look, you'll see a lot of high weirdness going on around those dates. And Downard, really the first mention of Downard in pop culture was, once again, Robert Anton Wilson talked about him. Wilson, oddly enough, had his own experience on, it happened on July 23rd in, I think it was 73. He had been dabbling in Crowleyan rituals and the one called the Invocation of the Holy Guardian Spirit, and dabbling with psychedelics as well. And on July 23rd of, I think it was 73, he invoked an entity that he believed was from the star system Sirius. And during that same period, I'm not sure if I write about about it that much in the Downer book, but during that same period, Philip K. Dick was having experiences with denizens from Sirius, as was, who else am I forgetting? There's a few others. There's a, British writer, what was her name? Doris Lessing. And, as well as a lot of the other, psychonauts of that period, Timothy Leary and, John Lilly, though they didn't call them entities from Sirius, they were having contacts with otherworldly beings, or so they said. So there's a lot of energy going on during that period. Now, I guess the reason I brought this up, the first mention of Downer in pop culture that I really ever saw was Robert Anton Wilson.
Sorry.
Yeah, Robert Anton Wilson, in the mid-70s, received some tape recordings called the Sirius Rising Tapes, and it was basically tapes that discussions between William Grimstad and James Shelby Downard. And it was like a 12-part series of tapes, this extensive thing where Downard got into a lot of the connections, the Freemasonic connections with the moon landings and all this odd stuff. And since that time, nobody's been able to get a hold of these tapes. I've been in contact with William Grimstad over the years and tried to see if he'd be what the status was of the tapes, and he said he has them on old reel-to-reels, and it would be quite an effort to get them transferred over to the new technology. And I said, well, I'd even be willing to take them off your hands if the price was seemed right. And he said, well, I've already promised them to a couple other people, so maybe someday they may or may not see be released. Who knows?
Were these things that were passed around through different people?
Well, it was tapes that Grimstad had released. Okay. And I don't know if he was selling them, but it was like, just during that time period, then they're not available anymore. I'm sure people have copies of them, but I haven't been able to track some down. So I don't think they were widely circulated, from what I can tell. But so... who knows? But so as I was looking into a lot of this stuff, I noticed searching the web one day, and I noticed Michael Anthony Hoffman had a tape that he was selling at one time with Downard of Downard talking about it, different theories and whatnot. I thought, huh, holy crap, that's interesting. And apparently it was just limited for a short period of time. I don't know what the deal was. And so I contacted Hoffman about it. He said, oh, I still have a tape available. And I thought, he'd send me a copy for free, since I was writing a book on Downer. But he ended up charging me kind of exorbitant cost for a tape. Actually, it was the MP3s. $40 or $50. I thought, I got to hear this. So anyway, I got them from him, and part of the agreement was they're not to be shared with anybody. And so anyway, I have these MP3s of Downard, and it's quite fascinating hearing the man talk, hearing the southern drawl of this crazy character sharing all his different theories.
What's is an idea of what's on the tapes? It's interesting that he doesn't want that shared.
Well, I think you could probably purchase it from him, but
okay.
Perhaps he wants to profit off these.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been a while since I listened to them, but he's talking about his wife, who was called the Great Whore, who they this you know, the sex magic ritual group that lured politicians and whatnot in to be blackmailed and have these call to chaos rites. He talks about his wife, and he mentions her name. That was the first time I had heard her full name, and it's Anne Whitweer. And he hadn't seen that written about anywhere. So there's little nuggets in there like that that people, if they even wanted to get in to researching about Downard, they could look into Anne Whitweer and find out more about her as well. You know, I think, I'm not sure, I think I might have heard these tapes after I wrote the book, so I'm not sure if I mentioned her name in the book. I might have, but so, you know, there's different stuff. It's the MP3s, I guess it was from a tape, so it's probably 60 minutes of stuff, and I'd have to, it's been a couple of years since I'd listened to them, but let me get back to you on that.
Okay.
Let me ask you something, Adam. Do you practice sex magic yourself?
No. Well, maybe we all... maybe we all do in a certain sense, however you want to characterize whatever sex magic is. But all no, right. I haven't. At least not in the technical sense.
Okay. I was just wondering.
Yeah, he's really yeah. He's really gotten into studying that lately, so
yeah. I'm reading a few books. I haven't really made it all the way through them yet, but it's pretty interesting.
I never know what he's going to ask, Adam, so, you know.
Hey, I'm
it's an interesting subject area. What's your overall thoughts this far on it?
Well, Lucas? I see the potential for manipulating certain aspects of your life, you know, that you couldn't normally reach that level of power, you know, just using your own will and stuff, you know. Hold on, let me start from the beginning. I get it all blurred and mixed up. I see it as just as a way to accumulate this kind of ethereal power, and then you could use that in certain aspects of your life for manipulation, because it's all about getting into a certain mind frame, and once you're in that mind frame, you can accomplish so many more things that you could normally, because, you know, that's what a lot of magic practice is about, is getting into the right mind frame so that you can accomplish certain tasks at hand. And it seems to be like, it seems to have an effect on, it has like a domino effect. You see what I'm getting at here? I'm not the best at explaining things, but... If it starts to manipulate one aspect of your life, it seems to have a domino effect on all of the people involved whenever you start messing around with that sort of thing.
Well, there's the left-handed path and the right-handed path, and, you know, a lot of this came out of tantric sex, which...
Right. That's basically
trying to channel that... energy and utilize that for some type of will to power, or you know.
Right. Yeah. You do have to be like
consciousness.
You would have to become like a master of tantra first, which, you know, all of these people that have all of these resources, all these funds, you know, all this access to information. And I try to tell some of my friends is, you know, if you have money, you have access to knowledge. And a lot of these high-standing political figures, they have all of this money, they have all of this knowledge, they know, you know, they can hire people to coach them, whatever they need, you know, they're part of these underground groups like you're talking about, and you know, it's a far reach to say that they would be masters of tantra. So, oh, you lost him.
Hello?
Hey, I think the Syrians cut us off. I'm sorry.
Getting into some heavy stuff there. What Robert Anton Wilson, what they were inferring or suggesting in like the Illuminatus trilogy and that the body was really to do with the Kundalini powers, the serpent powers, and when you fire off those higher circuits, you'll know the secrets of the Illuminati.
Yeah, interesting. My brother's kind of the authority on the whole Kundalini yoga subject.
Adam, what do you think about all the Downard's ideas, and what do you think of all this stuff? Do you think there's anything to it, or do you think it's more like just an interesting thing to study, or the guy was just kind of crazy?
All of the above.
Okay.
It seems like something resonates there with these theories. With the Illuminati.
Hey, it's a wonderful world of Skype. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we just missed all of that. it just keeps disconnecting us.
Yeah, yeah. Must have hit a nerve with the Illuminati, I said.
I think so, yeah. So, Adam, before we go, I mean, what are you working on now? What's next for you?
Boy, a few things. Right now, I have a book on the history of Discordianism. Okay. That is in the phase where they're laying out the book, and right now I'm just going back and forth with the publishers. They're sending chapters to me, and I'm reviewing them because there's a lot of graphics and images and different materials in there, so it's kind of a complicated project as far as got to put in a lot of captions and identify what's this and how it relates to this part of the book, and then there's just a lot of different cool materials, like the first edition of the Principia Discordia, which no one has really ever seen except for a handful of people. That's going to be part of this book. So right now we're in kind of the layout mode and getting it completed, and hopefully it'll be, just talking to the publisher, maybe 2 or 3 months down the road it'll be available for folks. So that's one of the things I'm working on now.
I think that book, I think you put out like a video where you showed that book.
Ah, yes, I did. Made a couple of videos. I wanted to start getting the kind of message out there about this project, and also to kind of set the record straight, so to speak, because there's a lot of bad information out there about the history of the Principia Discordia, so trying to, kind of set the record straight type thing, and also get some interest going. So if people go to YouTube, and I think that there's a couple of videos, if they plug in Go Rightly, Principia Discordia, then they can check out those videos to get a little more background on what I'm talking about.
And Adam, where can everybody get your books, and Where is all that available?
AdamGoRightly.com, or just go to Amazon. And I've also released some music, too. I have an album I just put out called Psychedelic Secret Agent.
Nice.
Excellent. Cool.
And I need to get more... kind of updating the links to my website, so gosh, I have all that stuff on people would go to do a search if they're interested in the music. I also have some videos out there, but they can go. They do a God. I should have the web address, but it's at Bandcamp. If you search for Adam Gilreitly in Bandcamp, I have all my albums there. And I've also been working with this guy Floyd Anderson. He does a lot of cool conspiratorial videos and whatnot. He's taken some of my music and made some music videos, which are pretty cool and crazy.
Yeah, I think I've seen one of those.
Yeah, one called Human Stew, which is kind of
that was it.
Kooky one. It's about the invasion of UFO knots, so he uses a lot of footage from some of the classic 50s movies, so it's a lot of fun. So that's one of the things I've been up to, and yeah, there's a few book projects in the works as well, so yeah, just keep dialed into my friend me at Facebook or the website adamgorightly.com or the blog, which is gorightly.wordpress.com.
Well, Adam, we want to thank you for coming on again. You're always excellent, always informative.
Yeah.
And once you get the Prince of the Discordia book out, we'd love to have you back on.
Oh, super, yeah. Hopefully
about the history of Discordianism.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be not too far in the distant future.
Excellent. Well, if there's anything you want to ask Luke or you want to say?
Well, I guess until next time.
Okay. Well, we're going to go to break, and Adam, just stay on the line with us. We'll be right back on Conspiranormal.
Okay.
Let's go get some pounders and some slam pigs, bro. All right, man. We are back on Conspiranormal, and as usual, you know who I am. You know who this guy is over here.
Stop doing that.
Everybody knows who we are by now. We don't have to tell them. Really good interview with Adam Gilreitly.
Yep.
Always awesome to have him on the show, man. I am very, very, very impressed.
Some high weirdness.
Yeah, there's definitely always some high weirdness with him. So, next week, we're just going to cut this short. Next time, actually, in 2 weeks, we're going to have on the Bishop. Bishop James Long. He is of the paranormal clergy, I believe is what they're called. And we're going to talk to him about exorcisms.
Oh.
And that should be, I think, an interesting show, as usual. So, think of some stuff you want to ask about exorcisms.
Yeah, man, totally.
Well, without further ado, guys, I want to thank everybody for listening. And hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Adam Gilreitly. And we're going to just call it a night and go get some slam pigs.
Go get ourselves some psychoactives.
All right. Y'all have a good night. And come with us next time on Conspiranormal.
Peace. Look up, just